Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, good day. It's a privilege to have you all here. We have about 20 people on the call, which is we're very excited about to have this level of attention. I think it speaks to the appeal of our company towards the investor community. I speak here as the chairman of the company. So as you may know, Horizon Capital, the fund I represent, has divested of its stake on October 2 via an ABB. The divestment, as it was shared by the company in a press release, was fully motivated by the fact that the fund was a 2008 vintage fund, so it was already past its time. And as shared in the press release, I have no plans to quit my involvement with Purcari. I'm staying on as the chairman of the company. So without further ado, I'll pass the word to the people who do all the work. This is Eugen Comendant, the Chief Operating Officer, who will lead today's call. Eugen, the word to you.
Thank you, Vasile, and good afternoon, everyone. We are very pleased to report strong figures for the first 9 months of 2019. It's again continuing the successful story of Purcari. So I guess without further ado, we can go straight into the meaty part of our presentation, and we can jump to slide number 15. Here we see the high-level financials, and as you can see, we are reporting strong revenue growth for the 9 months at 22% year-on-year. Of course, it's a very good result, and it is within our guidance. Further on, if we look at the adjusted EBITDA, we see a growth of 17% year-on-year. However, here it's worth mentioning that there have been primarily two non-operational impacts on this figure, and namely one of them being the adjustment for the 2018 IPO costs, which has increased the comparison base, and additionally there is a provision of 1.09 million RON of trade receivables impairment. It's a prudent inclusion in the figure that I will touch on later. Without this provision for trade receivable impairments, the adjusted EBITDA, basically with the adjustment for the IPO cost, would have shown a growth of 20%. For net income, we report a growth of 15% year-on-year, but here, same as the impacts that we had for EBITDA, for the adjustments, we have the adjustments for the IPO cost of 2018, and without the impairment, the provision for the trade receivable impairment, of 1.09 million, the growth in net income would have shown a 19% figure. Moving on to page 16, here we look at our key operational highlights. I will touch upon a few because on the other ones I'll be going into detail later in the presentation. But the two points to mention here is, of course, one of them is the exit of Horizon Capital with their divest of 22.7% stake through an accelerated book build. This was, of course, due to the Emerging Europe Growth Fund to reaching its maturity. So though we are sad to see Horizon leaving, we have also seen a positive impact on the liquidity of our stock, seeing the free float increasing to 75%. And we're also today, we're happy to see the stock price having recovered after the ABB price drop. Secondly, I guess I should mention something about our harvest. You know, we are registering a 9% decrease in the 2019 harvest comparing to 2018. But of course, we're comparing to a very strong harvest of 2018. And overall, it's worth mentioning that our wineries are full, and we are very well positioned to create sales growth in 2020 without any bottlenecks. Moving on to markets. So page 17. First off is Romania with a very strong performance. Its share of revenue has now increased to 41% of total group's revenue by recording a fantastic year-on-year growth of 25% for the first 9 months of 2019. In this growth, Purcari has been the star performer with a year-on-year growth in Romania alone of 35%. Crama Ceptura also showing double-digit growth in the first 9 months. However, we still expect more from the performance of Crama Ceptura in the fourth quarter of this year. Looking at Moldova, Moldova overall grew 18% year-on-year for the first 9 months. And actually, this growth is equal to the growth that Moldova has experienced last year when comparing to further back with 2017. And for this year, the main growth drivers being Purcari and Bardar. Operationally, you know, our partnership with the Coca-Cola Hellenic has been a topic in our previous presentation, and here it's worth mentioning that operationally we are continuing improvements in our partnership with Coca-Cola as our distributor, which in fact can also be seen in the figures. Moving on to Poland. Poland is showing strong growth for the period at 90% growth, despite comparing to a very strong nine months of 2018, when the cooperation with the new key account has been launched in the third quarter of last year. We're growing faster than the wine category so far this year, and ahead we're looking at a fairly strong fourth quarter this year. Asia, we see, of course, a fantastic growth of 72% year-on-year for the first 9 months, with very strong growth of Purcari and Bostavan in China. It's also very positive to see orders for Crama Ceptura and Bardar picking up, too. We're looking ahead at a strong fourth quarter. Czech Republic and Slovakia, here we do have a decrease in sales when comparing to the same period of last year. And this comes mainly from Tesco, one of our main channels, continuing reducing its footprint in the number of their stores, as well as having one fairly large order from one of our main distributors being shifted from this quarter to the next quarter. It's worth mentioning here that the last year's fourth quarter was also a strong one for these markets. So we know that we do have quite a challenging fourth quarter ahead of us. We will have to find ways to recover sales here. But I want to assure everyone that the teams are working hard not only to create a short-term inflection, but also to create opportunities for growth in these markets for the long term. Ukraine has shown again a strong growth of 21% year-on-year for the first 9 months. Purcari and Bostavan showing strong growth, and then if you look at the rest of the world, as share of sales, Belarus and Baltics they do lead the category, with Nigeria and Canada creating strong volumes and following up Belarus and Baltics. It's also worth mentioning here that Purcari alone, as a brand, has doubled its sales in this category of rest of the world markets. Moving on to page 18, when we look at the brands, we see Purcari growing by 32%. It's a fantastic result, with Romania, of course, leading in its contribution to this growth. Moldova is the second strongest market for this brand, and China has contributed to a strong growth year-on-year in this first 9 months, too. Overall, we do expect the strong growth of Purcari to continue and to extend in the fourth quarter of 2019. Bostavan, we see strong growth in Poland with further widening of our presence in large retail chains. The introduction of new products is also starting to show positive effects and a fairly strong contribution to the growth of sales. Overall, the growth in Bostavan brand has been impacted by the performance in Czech Republic, but Asia and Ukraine show strong results with growths of 65% and 26% respectively, leading to an overall growth for Bostavan at 7% year-on-year. For Crama Ceptura, we are registering a solid double-digit growth at 13%. At 13% indeed. And we're looking at further improvements in performance with the launch of Dominum Servi, supported by strong marketing campaigns across all communications channels in Romania. Looking at Bardar, Bardar is showing a very strong growth in Moldova and Belarus, with a 25% of sales going to these countries. Overall, as sales continue to grow in Moldova, we will be looking at a stronger shift towards bottle sales versus bulk sales. This, of course, leading to stronger margins. Now, if we turn and we look at the P&L, page 19, we look at the revenue. We report very strong, very solid revenue growth at 22.2% year-on-year for the 9 months, with primary growth drivers being Purcari and Bardar. We do expect equally strong Q4 and full-year revenue figures being within our guidance. Looking at gross income, we have strong gross margin at strong growth at 22.6%, growing slightly faster than the revenue due to the effect of premiumization, which takes effect via certain price increases and moderate changes to the product mix. G&A shows a growth of 70% year-on-year, but is mainly due to certain cost allocations in 2018 that led to a difference in the base of comparison when it comes to this G&A cost. And sales and marketing is stable at around 8% of revenue, though slightly higher growth when comparing to the revenue growth. EBITDA, again, as said, we see very solid growth of EBITDA at 70% when adjusting for the IPO cost in 2018. And as mentioned, here it's important to pay attention to the provision for the trade receivables impairment of 1.09 million RON that has impacted the EBITDA growth figure. It's a prudent approach from the management. And despite our expectation to recover most of these receivables, we have decided to account for them. Without this provision, the total adjusted EBITDA growth would be at 20%, so there was an impact of 3 percentage points. Net profit at RON, at 29.4 million RON, the net profit is up 15% year-on-year, and it's now at 21%. It's slightly under our guidance, but again, same impact here as for the adjustments when it comes to the EBITDA. We have the adjustments for the IPO cost in 2018, and we have the effect of this provision of 1.09 million RON for trade receivables and impairment. Without this specific provision, the net margin would have been 22%, so within our guidance, and it would have shown a growth of 19% year-on-year. Moving on to page 21, here we can see the dynamics when it comes to our harvest and the purchases that we've done from third parties. As mentioned, our harvest is down 9% this year when comparing to last year. But yes, we are fully, our wineries are fully loaded to provide for strong growth in 2020 without any bottlenecks. And also worth mentioning that the harvest in key grape and wine producing countries has been significantly down this year, with France, Italy and Spain registering 13%, 17% and 19% respectively decreases in their production. So this of course comes with a potential, and the potential is towards a potential higher level of pricing in the market. If we move on to page 23, we can see here we can see our guidance, and we can see that revenue and EBITDA for the 9 months are within our guidance. The net income margin is slightly under, but again, accounting for that the provision and also looking ahead at a strong fourth quarter, we are maintaining the guidance for the full year, and we are confident that all these metrics will be within our guidance. With this, I would like to thank you for your attention, and now I'd like to open the floor for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. First question comes from Katalin Diakonou from Raiffeisen Bank. Please go ahead.
So, hello everyone. So, I have three questions. The first one would be that I noticed that you have some new varieties in Crama Ceptura. So, did you complete the acquisition of the assets from Hush? The second one would be, what was the FX gain from in the third quarter of because the Moldovan leu has had depreciated in the third quarter? What is the run rate right now for general and admin costs? So we saw a jump in the third quarter. So if it contained also the provision, what would be the run rate right now for general and admin? Thank you.
Thank you, Katalin. So I get you. So your first question is regarding Hush and the inclusion of the harvest from Hush in the product range of Crama Ceptura. Indeed, we have released some of the products from Hush, and these are also mentioned in the presentation. One is Busuyaka de Buhotin, one is Gihara de Hush, and one is the Temuyasa Romaniaske. Of course, the share of sales from the wider figures is fairly small, but yes, we are there. And as mentioned, the product range of Crama Ceptura has widened with a more important product, which is the Domnum Cherry. And we are hoping to see a net increment on sales due to that product, because it covers a certain area of, let's say, that it covers a price segment where we were lacking a product, and it's supported by a very strong marketing campaign across all the communication channels in Romania. Probably you've seen it on TV, I hope so, or maybe on social media, but we will be quite loud in Q4, and we hope that there'll be a net positive impact from the release of the Domnum Cherry, but also of the rest of the products in the portfolio. When we talk about the FX effect, I'll answer you the question. Mr. Arapan, the CFO who is here, he may add something to my answer. But overall, the effect that we saw in the first half of 2019, it has been offset by the leu returning to the initial level. So in fact, for the full period of 9 months of 2019, the effect of the leu is minimum. If we were to take the Q3 versus Q2, yes, there is an impact, but overall for the 9 months of this year, the impact on the from the FX is minimum. In terms of a G&A jump, we mentioned that there is a jump due to certain cost allocations from 2018. So it's not an operational jump, it's more of an accounting jump. And the provision that we mentioned regarding the trade receivables impairment, it's actually not part of the G&A, but it is hitting, of course, the EBITDA and the net profit. And that figure is 1.09 million. Again, the management here is very confident that we will recover most of this figure, We have all the tools to do so, we have very high confidence that this will be the case. But nevertheless, it was a decision to, you know, for full disclosure and to also be prudent and to under promise and over deliver is to account it in our figures, and thus the impact on the EBITDA, the reported EBITDA and net income. But overall, again, the G&A jump is more of comparing to a lower base in 2018 when due to certain cost allocations in different periods of 2018.
Okay, Mr. Diacanu, are you finished with your question? Okay, apparently Mr. Diacanu is finished. The next question is from the line of Adrian Faircu from Datamon. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I noticed that in the first half of the year you bought some land from a winery from Moldova. My question is the legislation from Moldova related to the land acquisition has changed, because we know that there is about 100 hectares also on Viticola Vin, and I wonder if the two type of lands are the same as status or they are different.
Thank you, Adrian. In fact, there's no change that we know of in terms of the legislation. And Victoria Vin is something, it's a structure that we've been working with previously for all our land in Moldova. There's been no change in the structure that we have in place. So yes, the full acquisition is yet to be finalized with all the rights and all the paperwork and documentation being finalized. But overall, there's no change in the structure in how we work and how we land our vineyards.
Okay, so going forward, we can buy as a company additional plot land as primary owner in Moldova. So Purcari basically can.
Continuing. So as we continue, we will continue the structure of the lands being in the property of Victoria Vin. With, of course, all the contracts being well structured, that we as Purcari Group have full access to this land.
Maybe to add here, Adrian.
Yes, please.
The way we protect ourselves, because the structure goes back to 2010, when the initial investment in Purcari was made. Because of this limitation on land ownership, the way we structured ourselves and protected ourselves, the investors in Purcari, is that we pay the absolutely minimum lease price allowed by the law, just so we can understand the impact. So the total amount of annual lease payments for all the land leased from Victoria Vin is at around 80,000 euros, 80 annual. And the second element is that there's a clause in the contract that says that when the law will allow for this,
yes.
We have a call option on the land, again, at a rather nominal price than the minimum allowed by law. Victor Lapan, if there's anything more to add to what I shared, please do so.
Victor Arapan is okay with the answer from Vasile.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Dan Torneo from Torneo Media Content SA. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. The first question is for Mr. Arapan, second for Mr. Bostan, and third for Mr. Tofan. So, Mr. Arapan, you finalized the share buyback program with a cost of roughly 1 million euro. As the repurchased shares will be handed to employees, when and where will this expense be recorded on the balance sheet? I mean, is it going to be a one-off expense, or is it going to be spread along multiple quarters or years? And how will this impact the bottom line? So second question is for Mr. Bostan. When deciding and structuring the share buyback program, has the board been notified by its chairman about Horizon's intention to sell the stake in Procar at about the same time? And if so, have the board debated the ethical aspect of the deal, as this might raise suspicions that its proposal might be seen as pushing up Procar market price and facilitating the exit of Horizon at a better price per share? And third, for Mr. Tofan, during the share buyback and private placement, you acted both as a buyer and as a seller of Procar shares, and you've been able to synchronize the timing from your position as chair of Procar and partner in Horizon. Taking into account that you might have found yourself into a conflict of interest, have you insulated yourself from the board discussions related to this share buyback program and its timing? If not, then in order to eliminate any conflicting interest, wouldn't have been more appropriate if Horizon sold the stock before the buyback program had started or long after its ending? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for the incisive questions. We're certainly happy that also, say, tougher questions are asked, if I could add this to, say, the tough question kind of category, because it insinuates a certain potential conflict of interest.
No, sir. I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just asking you to shed some light on this ethical aspects of this deal. That's all.
No, absolutely, Dan. Absolutely. So that's why I think these kind of questions should certainly be asked, and we're very welcome, because if that's one thing we're trying to assure everybody, that when it comes to corporate governance, we adhere to the absolutely highest standards. So maybe it's helpful to start with a timeline of the events here. So we took the company public on 15th of February 2018. And the prospectus for this listing, which was being elaborated in the autumn of 2017, listed among the plans of the company to allocate to management up to 2% of the company as share grants, so effectively, say, free shares. Plus, in addition to this, another package based on a certain high strike price, depending on the IPO price. Consistent with it. So we're talking here about these plans being elaborated back in autumn 2017. Then the company becomes public in February 18, and our first AGM that year was in June, on 10th of June. And this is important, the date here, because it was a later AGM, you know, because it was the very first reporting, so we had to do the audit and so on, so hence the date of June 18, the first AGM. And again, consistently with the plans elaborated long before IPO shared in the prospectus, the AGM has been asked to approve the management stock options plan. We call it the long-term incentive plan for management, composed of allocating up to 2% of shares in the company to the management, plus an additional options pool with a strike price at 20, 30, and 40 RON per share. At that time, I think the share was trading at around 18 RON, so we set the strike price quite high, so 20, 30, and 40 RON per share. So that's the second important, I think, milestone in terms of the timeline. So running ahead, the way we structured the share grants and the options pool was, of course, based on a vesting period of 4 years. So that meant that, you know, the company to the company, in order to distribute the shares and to distribute the options, needed for the first year needed about, you know, 0.5% equivalent for the share grants, and based on our calculations, as much for the options part, so about 1% per year. And hence, when we asked, when we sought approval for initially for 1% in the company distribute management, and then the year after for another percent. So if you're lost in numbers, I think the bottom line is that as of the AGM of this year in April, in April or May. Yeah. Apologies, I don't have the figure now. April of this year. We reconfirmed with the AGM the intention, you know, to distribute to management the shares according to our share options plan. There was one more point to your question, Dan. There was one more point on the agenda of this AGM, which was not voted by the shareholders. That's a very important point, where we asked the permission from the AGM for board to approve the issuance of a new share up to a small threshold, up to 5%, without the approval of the AGM. And again, the intention for those shares was that the board has the capacity to issue new shares so that to distribute to management. So I'm using all those data points to make the following argument, that the intention to distribute the shares was long planned. The second, in order to distribute these shares, we had to buy them from the market. And this was, of course, long before the planned ADB of Purcari. Now, in terms of the ADB of Horizon Capital, ADB of Horizon Capital, again, back in the roadshow, of course, this was one of the most popular questions we're having. What about the share overhang, you know, and the private equity having to exit at some point? And of course, our we had to provide, you know, detailed guidance in terms of when this will be happening. And at all time, we're saying the same thing, which is, you know, this fund, the second one-year extension of this 2008 vintage fund will be expiring on, say, 15th of February 2020. So we will have to be selling by February 2020. We extended this deadline as long as possible. So basically, very, very close to the deadline, you know, it was realized by ADB. So I hope this provides, you know, this timeline provides enough comfort that, you know, the share buyback and the sale of Horizon shares are completely independent. You know, if I'm to put my Horizon hat on, then I would say, you know, the Horizon sale happened at in my view, and here, subjective here, low price relative to the true value of the company.
Thank you. My first question related to the when this expense will be found in the bottom line for Mr. Arapan.
Yes, as Vasily told, this stock option plan was designed to motivate employees and managers. So all expenses...
Mr. Arapan, we cannot hear you. Can you get closer to the microphone, please?
Okay. I will repeat. As Vasily told, the stock option plan was designed to motivate employees and managers. As all expenses with employees and managers, it is considered employees' benefits and will be accounted in the profit and loss account. Depending on the time when the company is signing agreements with managers, the vesting period will start, and it will be allocated proportionally. A part of these expenses will be allocated in 2019, and the rest will be recognized in 2020. As you know, the stock option plan is designed was approved with 4 years vesting.
by one quarter being allocated each year. We started it a little bit later than it was approved in 2018. So we expect that about 50% of these 200,000 shares that was bought by this buyback will be recognized. 50% will be recognized in the P&L of 2019, and 50% will be recognized in 2020.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next question is from the line of Caius Rapanau from BCR Erste Group. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. First, congratulations for yet another strong quarter, as we are becoming quite accustomed from you. I have two questions. One of them relates to the volatility of acquisitions that you make from your partner farmers. I see that it varies quite a lot compared to the previous year. And I was wondering, as a matter of strategy, if these acquisitions in terms of quantity are so volatile, how do you still manage to keep the quality of production of these partner farmers in line with your requirements, considering that, you know, I mean, some years you buy a lot more and some years quite a little bit less. And the second question was if you have any news regarding your dividend policy. And that's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I'll have an attempt to answer the volatility on the acquisition question of the acquisition of third-party grapes. Though, of course, we do not have our chief production officer in the room to be able to go into detail. We'll see if Mr. Arapan wants to fill in on my answer. But overall, indeed, we do work with third-party growers that we do have a very strong relationship, and we ensure that the produce is according to our specifications and according to our needs. But of course, there's still a share of that purchase that is done on the open market. You know, this year we had quite a favorable situation where the supply in the market was fairly high, and that of course was also with a certain effect on the price. But there is a certain share of the purchases that is done with direct third-party producers that we work with, and also a share of the purchases that is done on the open market. Overall, you know, as I mentioned in the presentation, we purchase in accordance to our needs and according to our capacities, and the forecasted sales for the next year or the years to come. Mr. Arapan, if you want to add anything to this answer.
Yeah, I just will add that during 2019 we increased our own vineyards, so the surface of our own vineyards, by 260 hectares bought from Wismut's company here in Moldova, and as well we rented on good condition, very good business condition, 100 hectares in Huj in Romania. So our base of vineyards, actually managed by us, was increased by about 40%. So it's normal that the volume of grapes bought from third party will decrease, as well as previously mentioned by Eugen. We took care last year in 2018 to make quite enough quantity of stocks for red wines to put them to maturity, as well as to increase our raw material for brandy production. So this is I wanted to add.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Arpan. And regarding the question on the dividend for next year, it's maybe a bit early to make a full statement, but overall our policy and our strategy when it comes to to our stock and investor relations is that we want to have a yearly dividend. This comes from, of course, our desire to create a strong yield for our investors, both through stock price appreciation through our performance, but also through the issuance of the dividends. And of course, something that we mentioned in the discussions when we see each other face to face, that having a policy on issuing a dividend year on year also creates a certain discipline within the company, and it creates strong connection between the management, the employees of the company, and the final shareholders, who are the final owners of the company. Okay. Are we on?
Yes. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. The next question comes from the line of Daniela Cilari from BT Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, and congrats on the results. So I have a question about Poland. We've seen it scored a healthy year-on-year growth during the first 9 months. And earlier in the presentation, I think you're mentioning about a distributor sales shift. So if you could please detail a bit on that and the overall strategy of that market. And if maybe there is a target of sales in terms of overall sales of the company, so now it is at 10%, and where do you think it might thrive? Thank you.
Thank you, Daniela. If I may only confirm your question, because it was a bit difficult to hear you. It was actually a bit too loud. First one is regarding Poland and where we see our stance with distributors and the evolution for the market in general. And the second question, I'm afraid I didn't quite catch it. Do you mind repeating it?
Yeah. Can you hear me now better?
Much better. Yes.
Okay, so so now I was asking that the shares of sales of Poland in terms of overall sales of the company 10%, and whether there is a target where it can arrive in terms of sales.
And this would be Poland. You're also referring to Poland, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, overall for Poland, we did have. We were impacted also by a shift of sales from one of our key distributors in Poland, which moved from September to October. So that has also negatively impacted our performance in Q3. We do see already a strong pickup in Q4. So we do foresee a stronger Q4 in Poland. Overall, though, if we look at the overall strategy, we are looking at Bostavan further creating growth in the market, and overall, when we look at Bostavan, we do see a potential and upside in creating other sub brands that potentially generate higher margins. And because Poland is such a high a market with such a high share in Bostavan sales, we do see that there is a high upside in Poland. So in terms of share of sales, that kind of relates to it. Now it's at 10%, but again, it was a certain shift in orders that were not realized in Q3, but they will be realized in Q4. And of course, there was also a very strong performance in Romania that actually attracted some of this share of sales towards its side, and China as well, a 72% increase that also has also gained share in our sales mix. So overall in Poland, we are looking at continuing our growth. There is still a lot of upside in the market, and we do overall see Poland as a, you know, we keep on speaking about the next Romania and Poland with Ukraine. We do see these two markets having high potential that we haven't realized yet.
Okay, thank you very much.
There are no further questions at this time, and I would like to hand back to Mr. Eugen Commandant for closing comments. Please go ahead.
Okay, cool. I guess I'd like to thank you all for you know, for being loyal investors, if I can say it this way. And I'd like to assure you again that the teams here are working relentlessly to generate strong figures and to create a strong return on your investment in the company. I'd also like to mention that there will be, as you probably all know, there will be an investor event in Prague very soon, and we will be present there too on the 3rd and the 4th of December. And for those that have missed our quite exciting blind tasting battle between our wines and other top-rated wines from the world, of course, that we have won in Bucharest. So for those that have missed it, I strongly invite you to stay tuned and participate eventually on the you know, at a similar event in Prague. Again, I'd like to thank you all and hope to see you all soon face-to-face at some of the upcoming events.